Hi, I'm Stephanie Shelton, and this is episode 9 of Conversations on Health, How We Get There. And what I'm going to do now is give you part 2 of my conversation with Dr. Radek Pěkný. He is the clinical psychologist in Prague, the capital of the Czech Republic, that you were listening to in the last podcast. This is where people have universal health care, including coverage for mental health, although it can sometimes be difficult to find a practicing professional there. For comparison, only about 60% of Americans have total mental health coverage. And in both countries, men are far less likely than women to even ask for help when they need it. Now, you'll recall that when the previous episode ended, we were talking about how life has changed after the COVID pandemic and how many people seem to have trouble coping these days. I'm going to pick it up at the beginning of that part. And as we go on, I think you're going to feel almost like you're in your own personal therapy session. I know I did. At least over here, once the COVID restrictions came off, it was like the whole country went nuts. I mean, it isn't that they're committing crimes, although there are more and more random crimes being committed for no obvious reason. It's just like we're all touchy. We're all screaming all the time. We're not us. Americans are really friendly people to everybody. I mean, this is, you know, it's like, call me by my first name. Hi. And that just doesn't feel like that anymore. It doesn't feel good when you're around people, even people you know. You're still a little afraid to touch people. I don't know. Something's wrong.
I think that's the result of frustration, because I think that we were really good before the outbreak of pandemic COVID-19. And a lot of us had whatever we wanted, so there were no worries. And when COVID-19 came, we were unprepared, and we found out that things we could believe in were uncertain or.
Yeah, uncertain. I mean, that's exactly it. It was so out of the blue that you couldn't have planned for it. And that makes life completely random. And that means you can't plan for anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, how can I plan to go to college for 4 years when I haven't the faintest idea if I'm going to be alive 3 months from now with COVID? And, you know, maybe that's it.
Yeah, and I also think that the pandemic showed us that we are quite mentally fragile. Because when you want to be resilient, you have to train for that, and we didn't train for that. And I think that pandemic showed us that we are really, really fragile. And I think that it all crises can be occasioned to make it better in the future. And the problem is that our parents should show us how to be not confident, but resilient. You are not born in resilient mode. You have to learn it. And we haven't learned it. How to be resilient. Because when you want to be resilient, I mean mentally resilient, you have to get out of your comfort zone. And it's very difficult to get out of your comfort zone when you have everything you need, when you are not forced to get out of comfort zone.
Interesting.
And for example, I like a psychology of resilience, because there are so many interesting topics, and it shows us that everything has been invented, because the one of the core thoughts of mental resilience is Stoic philosophy. And when you look at it, you can learn a lot of functional approaches how to overcome adversity in your life. But you have to learn it. And you can learn it not by reading books, but living adversity and getting out of your comfort zone. It is the only way how to be mental resilient.
Interesting. I never thought of it in psychological terms. I just thought of it as, you know, you get knocked down, you get up, and you go on to the next thing. But by doing that, you know that if you do get knocked down, you can get up. And I just, you know, I come from a theater family. We get knocked down all the time psychologically. You know, we don't want you. You don't fit the part, whatever it might be. And you just keep going on, and you don't think about that. That's building. In the old days, we would have said building character.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the. I have heard something being to that effect. The CDC, our main public health agency in this country, just came out with a study based on material that they got in late 2021 as the pandemic was winding down. And it was all about young people, because we are now having, in a sense, a separate epidemic of younger people more and more feeling suicidal or committing suicide. And what they basically said was that girls especially self-reported, 57% of them in this study, experiencing more suicidal thoughts and other mental health issues like sadness. And the CDC said it that the tendency had been there before, but it was accelerated by COVID and the lockdowns. Is that a similar thing that you're finding in the Czech Republic?
I don't have the raw data, but I think that the trend is quite similar here in the Czech Republic. And I think that what did COVID do is that COVID isolated you. And now we can see how powerful is getting in touch with people to speak with them face to face and stuff like that. Now, students found out that going to school is really good, and to meet other students and to have some social life, it's very important. Because when you, one of the theories says that when you have a I don't know how to say, but like net of people who are around you, they can give you a support, essential
social
support.
Safety net.
Social safety net.
Yeah.
And that's what COVID did with us. It isolated us. And even we have a social media and we have technologies, great technologies. So it can be replaced by, you can replace the human contact, direct human contact and sharing things and thoughts. And
going back to what you were saying earlier about that people are not taught to be resilient. One of the theories, we have this new thing now, stopping out, in quotes, stopping out, which is a new idiom, grammatically completely crazy, that the university students are using. And they are beginning to literally what they call stop out. I'm going to stop my classes. I'm going to just go and do something totally different for a bit, and then I'll come back to school. And they do it with almost no warning. And they do it because of their mental fatigue, as it were, with all that's going on. And so one of the theories that's been offered is that over here, anyhow, for I would say two generations, millennial and now Gen Z, parents have run interference for kids everywhere, right from the beginning. If there's anything that happens, the parent goes to the school, goes to the teacher, says, "You can't give my kid a failing grade. You know, They tell them they're better than anybody on the football field. They have no experience with failure. And then they go to university and they fail their first exam as a freshman at the university, which is the most difficult year, at least it was for me. And they don't know what to do. And they don't know how to deal with it. And that's what you were saying.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think it's the really same situation is here, because I'm a counselor at medical faculty. So I know the medical faculty environment. And I think there is quite different situation, because when you want to be a doctor, you are you really know why you do it, and you really want it. But I absolutely agree with you that children or younger generation are not prepared for the tough of the current life. And I remember when I was at school, my mother told the teacher, okay, if he will be impolite, just slap him. It's okay.
No mother would ever say that now.
Yeah. And that was okay. And I don't think that beating children is a good way, but I think that there is a lack of respect to authorities, because as you said, when there is a problem, parents go to school and everything, make everything clear, and there is no chance how that child could find a way how to solve the problem, how to speak with authorities, how to what to do when I'm not as good as other people, what to do when I lose, how to make it. For example, I have really personal experience, because during my secondary school, it was a school which was specialized to sport. And my specialty was athletics, and my results were really poor. I never had A from physical education and at my secondary school. And I was losing every race. I was one of the worst. For example, one of students in my class was later Olympic winner, Barbora Špotáková.
Oh, God. Oh, wow.
Yeah. She was in the same class, and I was losing every race. I was one of the worst, and it was really tough. I was afraid of bullying, because when we got to a locker room, everybody was shouting, okay, you are the worst, and what are you doing here, and stuff like that. It was really tough, but it was a great lecture for my life, because I've realized that moment that, okay, I'm not good at athletics, but I can be good at other things. And from that point, I'm decided to study. And to study psychology, because okay, when you have problems, it's better to study psychology. Everybody who studies psychology has some kind of problem.
So. Yeah, I wish I had studied psychology. that's really interesting. And you talk about one of the big problems, because we've been talking. Like when I was young, I was the only girl in my class in grammar school, and there was a lot of bullying going on, and I just learned to shut it down, because I was bigger than the kids, by hitting them, actually. And I won, because I was at that stage larger. But the problem today is, for us and young people, is the first thing we talked about, lack of resilience through parenting, and the other one is social media. What are you finding? And we say, if I say kids, that goes all the way up to people who are now in their 30s. They weren't quite as attached to the phones as the Gen Z group is, but so much on it is setting out to ruin somebody's life, it would seem.
Yeah, the world is global, and you can see what other parts of the world can offer you, and it can frustrate you. And the other problem is that when you use social media a lot, there is enough space for comparison to other people.
Exactly.
And comparison is a path to a hell, because when you compare to other people, you have a big chance to find out somebody who is much better at whatever you can imagine. But that's not the way how to live your life. It's better to look at your life and what can you do? Because when you compare to other people, it's not equal comparison, because when I compare to anybody on this social media, the background is totally different and everything can be different. So it's really stupid idea. But I realized that a lot of people mention, for example, in my psychotherapy session, that they use social media and they feel really, really frustrated after scrolling some pages. And
what do you tell them, Radek? People you see are a little older. I would think they're not necessarily teenagers, or are they?
Okay, don't stop scrolling social media, or just change the amount of time you spend there, because there is another problem with social media and internet and smartphones, that we are overwhelmed by information we don't need. And I think that our brain is not prepared for so many informations like we get today, and we need to have some digital detoxes. It's very important not to think. It's very important just look out of the window and think of nothing. And in this process, it's not about doing nothing. There's still something doing in your brain, but we are not prepared for so many information, and it overwhelms us, and bring us to states we don't want to experience. So my recommendation would be stop scrolling social media. Maybe try to give up social media for 1 week, just to have small experiment and to see what will you do in your life when you won't spend time on social media. And maybe you can find different things. For example, for me, it's I'm the happiest when I'm in the nature, especially in the mountains where there is no signal. So when there is dark, okay, I can't scrolling social media, and I can just lie down and sleep or think about my life. The same situation is when I walk in the mountains. They are just me and the nature, and I can contemplate about my life. And that's what I don't have enough time in my normal life when I work, when I go to work or have a family time. So I think it's better not to be on social media.
How do you convey that to a younger person who has literally grown up with a phone in his or her hand?
I try to persuade them to do small experiment. I really like doing experiment with my clients or patients, just to try how is it without your phone. And maybe they can find out that it's anxiety, it's tension, it's fear of missing out. But they also can find the positive way of not being on social media, internet. but they can't experience that without doing experiment. So it can be experiment for 1 week, maybe 1 day, maybe 2 days, I don't know, but try it, and I try to teach them to look inside, to see what's going on in them, inside them, without being on the internet. So that's what I would do.
Have you had any success with that advice?
I don't have adolescent in my care, so it's usually adults are my patients, and I also told them, but because when I work with people, it doesn't matter what kind of problem they bring to our session, but I'll see that we end up with restricted count of problems, and it's what makes anxiety with me. We are talking about thoughts and their influence of our emotions. We speak about how to say no and don't be guilty. We speak about sources resources like relaxation or doing sports. What's good in their lives and where is it? And those are very restricted themes, and it's all the same. And we are speaking about fears. For example, Heinz-Peter Durer is, I think, he's Austrian psychiatrist or psychotherapist, I'm not sure. And he wrote that the problem in a human's life are from fears, and how you handle fears in your life, and how you talk to yourself. So I try to teach my patients and clients how to treat themselves much better way than they did before. Because as you mentioned, there's a lot of evaluation in our society. Okay, you are great, you are mediocre, you are bad, but that's not important. And I learn, I teach my clients not to self-evaluate, but to understand what's happening inside them. So, for example, when you envy something to your friend or other people, it's not good to say, okay, I'm really bad because I'm envious, and I shouldn't be envious because my parents told me it's not good. But it's much better to say, okay, I'm envy. Why I'm envy? And for example, theory says that when you are envy, it warns you about your need, which is not fulfilled. So it's much better than criticize yourself. It's better to think about what this kind of emotions tells me and what I need. So
it sounds good. I would think it might be difficult for a person to do those things. I mean, I think back on my own life, I just kind of bumbled through it, and you know, but I learned as I went. But that was years and years and years of falling over something and picking myself up and learning something. And if you're in a crisis, you know, you need to make some changes very quickly, or you're going to spiral, you know, into a place where it's even more difficult to get out of. How do you get people to change?
I believe
we could ask that politically here in the United States too. You know, how do you convince a person that today you're going to go out the door and you're going to change something?
I think it's a process, but the purpose of psychotherapy and the most important thing in psychotherapy is a relationship between a therapist and client. And when the relationship, therapeutic relationship, is really good, it can be like fertile soil from where something can grow up. And I think what is important is that I believe in my patients and clients. I believe they can do that because I have some experience and I'm optimistic, but I know from my experience that people can really do even tiny changes in their lives. And the small or tiny change can start the chain of other changes. So we are talking about what they do in their life. We are mapping of their life, their thoughts, their emotions. And we try to stop and think about where they could do any they could do a change. And sometimes we need enough time to speak about it, but I think that there is time when you contemplate about your change, and that's absolutely okay. But then I try to force them, persuade them to do it in their life. And they are usually are not successful at the first phases. But after that, they, for example, they are successful in one case from 10, and it gives them a chance that the change can be done. And they start believing in themselves, and that's the process. Nowadays, I read a very interesting book about habits. It's called Power of Habits. And they say believing in the change is one of the most important factors in changing habits. So that's it. And for when the client come to me and we have the first session, I usually tell them that, okay, if you want to go to psychotherapy, that's okay, but it's a hard work. Just think about it. If you really want to do the change, it pains. And so sometimes they are prepared that it will be really hard work. That's it.
Interesting. Interesting. You know, you're telling me all the stuff that, or not all of it, but you're telling me a lot of things that I know now about myself, but only because I've lived through them. You know, and I didn't go to anybody. And, you know, it's interesting to see that some people just need help living through life, I would say. And some people can kind of find their way on their own or with their friends. And, and we're not all the same.
Exactly. They just need some kind of support.
Yeah.
And somebody who really believes in them.
Yeah.
Because they didn't experience that in their families. So why not? I really believe in people. And for example, in the Czech Republic, Česká spořitelná has a really beautiful motto, which says you are stronger than you think. And I really believe in that. I think that people are really stronger than they think. It's true. That's my experience in my own life, even in my practice.
Just to sum up, what do you see right now as the main issues that are facing your profession in the Czech Republic? And how do you, if you have shortages, which you talked about in trained professionals, how do you reach out to more people who need help if you don't have the people for them to go to?
I start from the last. I think that COVID really helped us in one thing, and it's development of special apps. And we, for example, in the Czech Republic, we have one or two really favorite mental health applications. One is called Don't Panic, and it's really good because there you can find information about relaxation methods, about how to measure your anxiety. You can have some data about your feelings, about your thoughts, and there you have information about crisis intervention centers and what to do when we are in trouble. So I think that's really great, and we really needed it. So we can thanks to COVID and the pandemic that it helped us to develop this kind of apps. And the problems, I think the problem are a lot of inside of scientific communities, because we have, from my point of view, really bizarre situation when clinical psychologists are arguing with psychotherapists who can do psychotherapy and how to do that. And I think that they should pull the rope from the same end. And so I think that the system should be improved, and there a lot of people will be able to provide mental health care for people who really need it. And I think that it's very important to talk about mental health. That it's okay. I think that the younger generations are more open and more educated, and that's great. That to know that okay, if you have problems, that you are not a bad person, you are not weak. That's just normal. Everybody has strengths and weaknesses, and that's okay. That's how it is, and it's absolutely normal. It's not about perfectionist. It's not about to be perfect. So I think that we should educate younger generation more. And I know that we have some educational programs which are at secondary schools, and to show them that it's okay to have a problem. We should teach younger generation how to be more resilient, how to do that. And I think that you don't have to do so much, or maybe one tiny information can change everything. So, but education is the way how to go in the future.
You're not talking so much about having more mental help available. In a sense, you're talking about not needing.
Yeah, but that's a good reminder, because when I start working with people, the first thing what I tell them is the goal of psychotherapy is not going to psychotherapy. Yeah, the goal or aim of psychotherapy is to learn what I need to make it on my own. So it's about making people more resilient, not to create addiction to a psychotherapist or psychologist. So that's a good point. Thank you for reminding. Yeah, not going to psychotherapy for 10 or 20 years and but to learn whatever you need and go to life and live.
And if you can get to younger people at the younger ages and make them more resilient, then they will not need perhaps to ever see somebody like you. You know, and not that you want to put a profession out of business, and you probably never will, but it's just that we were resilient years ago somehow. Because people like you didn't exist. You know, in my teenage world, maybe you were there, but none of us knew about it. And you were, you know, you just had to struggle through your life. So it will be interesting to see what happens. And again, if we can if we can get these perfect filters off social media. Nobody looks like those people on social media, and I don't think young people understand that.
Exactly.
It's TikTok filter, but
yeah.
All right, Radek, and did you want to add something?
Probably not.
Okay, so I want to thank you for stretching the envelope, as we would say, and using English. And using it very well to talk about this really important subject.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And that was also a way how to work with my resilience, because doing interview in English was really out of my comfort zone. So I learned a lot. So thank you for that. Thank you for the invitation.
That's Dr. Radek Pěkný. He's a clinical psychologist and psychotherapist in Prague, the Czech Republic. Now, in podcast 10, we're going to change subjects completely, as I have a conversation about something so many families are struggling with. It's finding the best way to care for a parent who can no longer care for himself or herself, and just how much it can cost to find, quote, a place for mom. I schedule one new podcast a month, so look for this next one in June, the drop day, usually the third Tuesday of the month. Updates wherever you get your podcasts. I'd really, really appreciate it if you'd subscribe. We're on Apple, Google, Spotify, TuneIn, iHeart, Podchaser, and my host platform, the Podbeam app. The video version is on YouTube. Show notes and links on my website, www.stephanieshelton.com/conversations. I'm Stephanie Shelton, and until I see you again, please take care of yourself and all those you love. Conversations on Health, How We Get There is produced and edited by Frank Harold. Research assistance from Dr. Richard Saltman, Professor Emeritus of Health Policy and Management, Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University in Atlanta.